At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
You're listening to the world's smartest podcast network.
When I go to Sacramento, I will pump up Sacramento. Sacramento. Sacramento.
Some say the news is fake. Others say it's real. These two don't have the time to check. Instead, Turner Sparks and Michael Ira Kaplan turn to comics stationed around the globe to be their eyewitness reporters so that you can know what's really going on. This is Lost in America.
All right, everybody, welcome to Lost in America, episode 261 from the Friars Club in New York City on location. My name's Turner Sparks.
I'm Friar Kaplan.
You can find me at turnersparks.com. You can find all my tour dates there. I have, I think, 10 or 15 up for this year and more going up every single day. And March 11th, I will be at the Friars Club in New York City. Go to turnersparks.com to get tickets or check the notes to this episode.
Cap in America, Cap with a K, is where you can find me on Twitter, on Instagram. Is it all, Friendster, MySpace, and all social media.
Friendster,
Peloton.
He's still on Friendster, ladies.
So come follow me. I need more followers. Please follow me. And then, I don't know. What else? What's on the show today? What do we got?
Great.
Who's our guest?
Professional podcaster, Michael Ira Kaplan.
I'm not used to seeing you. We're in person, we should say. I'm not used to being in person.
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm used to staring at you across the screen on a computer. So I could blame the Wi-Fi. I can't blame the Wi-Fi right now.
Today we're doing the round table. We have the whole pod here. We got Heaton.
All the brains.
We got Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy, Professor Andrew Heaton, everybody out. And then we're going to let the news develop. Russia hasn't attacked Ukraine yet, so that's on. That might happen. We don't know where Germany's going to land, where they're going to land on all this. So we decided this week, there's so much...
Slow news week.
It's not slow. It's the calm before the storm.
Oh, yes.
There's so many news stories worldwide that are about to happen. We said, let's do a roundtable with the brains this week from the World's Smartest Podcast Network. And then next week, once those things happen, we'll be back.
Once the Canadian truckers invade America next week or once.
We're not doing a Canadian truckers
or
episode.
Once the,
I don't care who wants a vax or who doesn't. That's not interesting news anymore to me.
Once the Germans decide which side they're on in this conflict.
Now we're
talking.
Once they decide who killed the Haitian prime minister.
Once they solve that mystery.
That'll get solved this week.
Yes. And maybe there'll be peace in the Middle East next week. We don't know.
Who knows? If you want to hear this, though, three extra times a week, and I know you do, me and Kaplan doing our half-hour full-throttle comedy podcast live from the bunker, go to patreon.com/lostinamerica to subscribe for $5 a month. You get an extra show three times a week. For $10 a month, you get a number one in Armenia Lost in America t-shirt. For $20 a month, you get your own advertisement on this show. And if you want to just Venmo us money,
We've learned that from one of our world's smartest brains. Really, Andrew Heaton is the best brain because he gave us this idea.
He said not everyone likes Patreon.
Yeah, some
people don't want to listen to you. They just want to give you money. So if you want to do that, at Turner-Sparks on Venmo.
Yeah, or Kaplan44.
But I'll cut your check. PayPal? Because outside of America, they don't use Venmo. What's our... what's my
Kaplan M15? I'm giving out my Gmail address.
Is that
Gmail?
It is?
I have a PayPal. Make sure to say it's for friends and family, though, so you don't get charged. I don't want any fees. Don't Don't get any fees. You give us money. You send us money without Loot fees money. Getting cut out.
What is yours, Kaplan?
KaplanM15 at Gmail. So
there KaplanM15 at Gmail on PayPal or at Turner-Sparks on Venmo.
And if you do want to subscribe to the Patreon, this week there was a giant bust in my building, in my apartment building.
Where a drug bust.
The 108 came in, the local police department. They found multiple weapons in an apartment. I'm going to be giving all the details and saying goodbye to a longtime character.
Oh, we have someone leaving the show. Someone's getting killed off.
Well, they might be either or in jail. We're I don't know if we could have or going to clink. So
that's
tune
it,
in
Cap.
This week.
All right. So everybody, point is, give us money. Come to my show on March 11th at the Friars Club. Follow Kaplan on social media. And now let's get to the world's smartest
brains.
All right, we're here inside the Friars Club. What's up, everybody? How's
hey,
it going?
Hello. What's up?
How's
hello, Friars Club.
This is an in-person podcast.
It's beautiful here. I can see all of your eyes. We're in this great room. Yeah.
It's fantastic. Keaton is in New York City.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Wearing, what kind of a jacket is that? Leather?
It's like formal cowboy.
Yes.
He's dressed
like. Like at the country club. He's like the bad boy you went on a date.
Cowboy black tie.
Yeah, cowboy black tie.
The belt, I have to say.
Thank you. The belt, like, it's a stunning belt. Very much like kind of Santa Fe looking belt. But this is part of my plan, see, because when I used to visit New York as a tourist, I was amazed at how nice everybody was. Then I moved here, and all of you decided to be assholes.
Right. Yes.
Like, the second I moved here, the mayor sent out a message with my photo in it and be a dick to me. And now I'm coming back, so I'm intentionally playing up the Texas thing so that people will be nice to me. And so far, hard neutral. I'll take it.
But your Texas look, it's a very Austin, Texas.
Yes.
Which is similar to a Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Yes, that's true.
Meaning it's not like cowboy.
Brooklyn plus cowboy.
Urban cowboy.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's
which
urban
is basically
cowboy.
What I am.
Yeah.
We could do a game show with like actual Texas people. See if you could pick him out. Like, is he live in New York or Brooklyn? Or Texas or Brooklyn? Right.
Yeah, it's very similar.
Recently moved to Austin from Brooklyn.
Right.
So before we get into this, let's all get our plugs out of the way.
Okay. Let's do it.
I am recording right here at the Friars Club on March 11th, my next comedy album. Kaplan will be there. Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy will be there.
That's right.
I believe Brian Sack, my friend, and
yeah, he's coming.
Oftentimes, a guest on my show is going
to
be there.
So even if you don't want to hear my comedy, come just to see these megastars.
Come to the show.
Star-studded audience.
Star-studded audience.
We should do a red carpet. And a step and repeat
a great idea.
To enter.
And we need
Turner Sparks and World's Smartest Podcast if, Network.
We need someone to interview us on the carpet, though. Who's going to be that person?
Oh, that's a good idea. Well, it's Teddy Kaplan. We'll get your kid.
How much would it cost for you all to chip in and get a limo? Because I think that'd be a fun evening.
And just have it parked around the
just
corner?
Driving around. You all get to take turns making out in it.
It's a good idea.
I'm making out with any of you people.
No, you do it with your significant other.
Oh, okay.
No, we're out for that makeout period.
Yeah, all right.
Anyway, she's March 11th, right, 7 p.m., 9 p.m., go to turnersparks.com, to get tickets. And Kaplan and I host Lost in America. Thank you. Last time Heaton put this show out, we got a ton of new listeners. So
Heaton heads,
Roy boys, they all joined us. So now we need more of you. Because we need more advertising.
The key
dollars
is to not sound desperate.
Lost in America. What did we put out last week? We've been talking about Ukraine. We've had comedians based in Ukraine on the show.
And we're talking about China.
We had a guy in Beijing. Episode was about Tony Cho in Beijing last week. All right.
Yeah. I think I said this on Twitter, but I mean it. I get more news from you two than I do from the actual news.
The lamestream media has nothing on us.
Nothing.
And they copy us. We'll do a story. We did a story on Bosnia a few weeks ago, and then I'll see in The Economist 3 weeks later, it's like, Bosnia's crumbling. And it's like,
When WSPN sneezes, The Economist catches a cold.
The whole world waits for us to pod. Yeah. And in the news.
We broke the Ukraine story months ago.
We broke it. And you did it in December.
In December.
That Russia was attacking.
I heard you gave Putin the idea.
Yeah. told him to attack in the winter. We broke that news months ago. We said, wait till February. You got a home field advantage. You know how to fight in the snow.
Putin, if you're listening, for $5 a month, be our Patreon subscriber, and we will be on your side. We'll be your lackey. Yeah.
Yes, we will promote all of your strategic games.
Yeah.
NATO, whatever you want to say about NATO, we'll say it.
So. If you ever get Putin as a guest on the show, I think we should invite him to a round table.
Done.
All right, great.
He's got to do it shirtless.
All right, fine.
And then I'm in.
We will do a topless authoritarian episode where all of us don't wear shirts and we all pick animals to fight.
Yeah.
Or maybe go in submarine. We'll do it in a submarine. It'd be a good episode. It'd make for a good podcast.
Heaton, go ahead. Or Andrea, go ahead.
Yeah, all right, I'll plug. I have a show on March 1st at Caveat in New York City. It's in the Lower East Side, and it's called The Data Science Spectacular. Mm. And it's an academic lecture, comedy show, and circus performance all in one to demystify what data science is and talk about how everyone can and should get involved. And you can come in person, which would be awesome, but you can also join via live stream, caveat.nyc, and for tickets. And also the link is in all my social bios at Jones Roy.
And I have been to your live shows before. They are delightful.
Well, thank
They're
you very
absolutely
much.
Wonderful.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yeah, thank That's you very much.
Caveat.
There we go. Yeah.
But the last one didn't have circus in it, I don't think.
The one you saw didn't. Yeah. We've added that since as I get more desperate.
So can you demystify circus?
I should.
You're demystifying data science. But
I should.
Circus is what?
Circus is, so that's like the trapeze and fire, and I'm trying to get them to let me set the theater on fire.
Are you going
to
do all that?
Torture some
I'm
animals.
I'm going to do trapeze and a lira, which is an aerial hoop, but I'm waiting for permission on the fire.
And stand and comedy.
And comedy, yeah.
I just want to see how this...
You really get banged in the house down.
I'm going to die. I'm like wildly out of shape. Because the problem is you do a circus act for 3 minutes and then you like can't breathe for 10 minutes and that's when I have planned like to speak. So I got to figure it out.
I'll bring a fire extinguisher.
You stunt double.
That's a great idea. You don't have like certain musicians will like just dub. Could you do that?
I might do that. Yeah,
just have it play and then it'll be slightly out of sync, but people will think it's a bit.
You'll be talking, you move your mouth. But
dub my own stand-up comedy.
Yeah, your previous.
Yeah, so come to see me figure out how to do that.
March 1st.
Yeah, March 1st.
I've got no dates to plug. I have quit being funny publicly.
Wow.
Maybe someday again I will be public funny. At the moment, I'm not. However, I do host The Political Orphanage and encourage people listening on your shows to come check out The Political Orphanage. I did a bunch of fun episodes recently. I did a special on psychedelics. I had on my friend Sarah Siskind, who I think you're friends with as well.
Sarah's great.
Who's very, very funny and an expert on psychedelics. And then I had on Ayla, who is a public intellectual and very high-end escort and cam girl who did LSD every week for about a year to talk to me about that experience.
Nice.
And then prior to that, I did much less sex and drugs related. I had a two-part special on homelessness, on the causes of and solutions to it that I put a lot of research
into. Are the solutions sex and drugs?
Yes, exactly.
I was going to say, don't sell the homeless.
Do LSD every day.
The homeless people I know.
She's not homeless. She's doing very well. So, ergo, the math is you have to do LSD every week for a year. That would cure all homelessness. Yes.
Yeah.
Andrea, and plug your show.
Yeah, I just realized I have a podcast called Majoring in Everything. I feel like I need to look at
me?
You all.
I didn't realize that. Thank you.
Podcast called Majoring in Everything. And it's for people who do lots of seemingly unrelated things. Mm-hmm. And so Heaton's been on the show and I'm slowly collecting.
She's trying to figure out a reason to have us on, or at least
waiting on my invite.
Yeah, all right.
Sweeps week.
You're coming in season
two. Hold
us
for sweeps. Yeah.
Season two.
But Lost Americans, head on over and check out both these podcasts if you haven't already.
All right, we're in the middle of the Olympics here, guys.
Well, football season's over.
We're
now,
only
so
eight minutes into this episode. Let's start it out. All right, so I'm going to go for it. The Olympics are happening, and depending upon when this comes out, but they're
still
happening for our show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A question comes up every year, every 4 years or 2 years or however often they do this, that is it worth
it? It's four.
Is it worth it? For these countries to do the Olympics. Now, the you lose billions of dollars by doing this. You build all these stadiums that you use once and never again.
Right.
It
routinely bankrupts the cities that put them in, right?
Routinely, yes.
And creates almost like always whole areas where no one goes because it was all just empty stadiums and concrete.
Like Potemkin stadiums.
Yes.
Well, because they don't have another use for it. That's the issue. There's another Olympics.
And now compounding that problem is this idea that no one watches the Olympics anymore.
Right.
Is anyone, I mean, like.
Well, white women watch the Olympics. Let's get that out of the way.
Let's sticking to numbers. It's record low. Yeah. Every single Olympics is like the lowest ever was 2018 Winter Olympics. Hmm. And this so far we're 40% lower than the lowest ever.
Really? How are the Summer Olympics doing?
I don't think they did very well.
Okay.
The Japan ones.
Well, they have to stop having them in places that aren't on our time zone. It really affects our...
Well, that's
who's left out is the West.
No. That's another big caveat. All these numbers are America only.
Yeah.
The Olympics could be gigantic in Botswana right now.
They should have it on our time zone, so
but
I don't care what time it is there.
To finish, America matters more than everybody else because we're the economy... I would say like America and China are the countries that are spending the most... I'm sure like the paying the Olympic committee, it's like
how many billions for NBC to get the rights to even show the Olympics?
Right. Yeah.
They're paying the IOC for all this, right? The
International
Olympic Committee.
So
and they're great stewards of money.
You could have every single person in like Botswana watching the Olympics, but like
who cares?
What's the TV rights to show it there? So the question is this, and then if no one's watching, then it's not really like a marketing thing for your country. Because that's one argument, right? That it's marketing. China's saying that it's still good for them. They love having the Olympics. For number one is they use it to like employ people. Mm-hmm. They build a million trains when it's coming up. Fast trains. Oh, and then and then they also say that, so it's good employment. It's frankly like Xi Jinping's using it to show the world like, hey, look at me. Look what I can do, you know? And then bizarrely, this is from the New York Times, China's saying that it's winter sports are not popular in China, so that this is a way to show Chinese people what winter sports are available to then build consumer spending.
To go skiing somewhere.
It's a lot
Maybe
of money to
buy
spend
skis
to
get, and parkas
yeah.
right.
in the future. Isn't a so lot the, of it very flat?
China?
Yeah.
China is like... Have you ever looked at a topographical map of China? So on the west coast, on the western side of China, it's very like mountainous. It like comes down all the way to the east.
Okay.
The question is, what countries would it make sense for to try to have the Olympics in the future? I don't think America makes sense anymore.
I think this is a pool situation. Is it better to have a pool in your backyard or to have a neighbor with a pool? It's better to have a neighbor with a pool. So I think like go to other countries, let them bankrupt themselves. I also like Canada would be great. Canada, why don't you bankrupt yourself doing this? That sounds true.
They already did.
That's
why the truckers are protesting now.
Plus If you're claiming that it's worth it for the national ego boost and so on and so forth, and there's psychic utility that's being derived, okay, I don't think the economics works out on this. Because I know that the Chinese plan involves, well, we're going to stimulate consumer economy by doing this. We're going to do lots of infrastructure spending. We're going to direct more economic activity to the northwestern part of China. I think those kind of Rube Goldberg schemes tend to fail and tend to be more inefficient in terms of resource allocation. You could argue that there's a multiplier effect from the infrastructure spending, but you can do that without the Olympics. There's nothing to stop you from just building roads whenever you want. I'd say let's try and trick Canada into doing it. That sounds terrific. Then it'd be in the right time zone, right?
Has Mexico done one?
They've had the Summer Olympics, obviously, at the
was it
Mexico? Or am I thinking the World Cup?
You might be thinking World Cup. I don't know.
I feel like with the altitude,
they definitely had the World Cup because that's where the waves started. Do you know that? Like in Europe, they call it the Mexican. Or no, that's the first wave. Where Europeans first saw the wave.
Like when audiences,
do the wave because
stupidest thing in
Europeans all call it the Mexican wave.
And we're like, oh, that's really
cool. What? That's... And it started in America, but they first saw it at the World Cup.
They culturally appropriated it from us.
Yeah, they did.
And now it's theirs.
Mexico took it.
Mexico's reaping our riches yet again.
But you know that originally the Olympics was not meant to be a nationalist thing? I don't mean like during ancient Greece, but I mean like when it got rebooted in 1854, it was going to be just individual participants going.
Hmm. Yeah.
And then it kind of became a sports version of team or of countries competing.
Because they knew then that, to go back to what I said earlier, white women would only want to watch, people are only interested in Olympics if it's their country's person.
Right.
Like they want to watch that whole story of the Michaela the skier. They want to hear the whole thing with her growing up. They're not interested if it's the same exact story and she's from Mexico.
Right. Yeah, I think you're probably right.
And every country has their own version of that.
And I think it's probably healthy too. Like I think that I think tribalism's inbuilt to the human experience. And the trick is to try and have it excised from us in a benign or productive manner, right? So if you're going to have sublimated warfare, which is what sports is at a national level, that's a good way to direct those instincts away from World War III and into gymnast.
What about this idea?
Into 14-year-old girls.
Yes, into 14-year-old girls who will be our proxy gladiators.
Yeah, who will abuse against their
The other issue with this Olympics now, with COVID, is you can't... Look, no one's been at the last two Olympics.
Right.
Yeah. Right, that's
so they're not even getting tourists to come see their country anymore.
Right.
So, you know one thing they don't do this specifically with the Super Bowl, but they use it a lot of the time, is they'll say, okay, we'll do it in Miami, and then we'll do it in San Diego, and then we'll do it in Las Vegas. And then there's like four. Yeah. Why don't we pick four countries around the world that are vacation destinations, and they rotate the Olympics?
I mean, Turner must have looked at my notes, because that's what I was going to say next. I was going to say, we got to do it the way the real world does it, the great TV show or the Super Bowl. It's like, you pick the best spots, you build them up, you spend money on it once.
And then every four years,
stadiums are always there. Right. Yeah. So you can reuse the stadiums over and over.
And it's a fun place to go.
You go like Ibiza, right? Like for the Euros. And you pick one in each market, right?
So each continent.
Because obviously we all know that if it's not on your time zone, the last, was it two at least? No, then you had Sochi.
Sochi hasn't been in this time zone in a long time.
So it's like middle of the night for the US. No one cares.
Or you have to watch the weird recaps that NBC does during primetime, which are just these sort of like hand-picked things.
You get
only
like
10
minutes.
And it's
something that happened 15 hours ago that you've already read on the internet.
The only people up are like cokeheads in like 3 in the morning who are up, oh, it's live. Look at something on TV.
Yeah, I need to do more cocaine.
How often do they change the games at the Olympics? Because that has all, like painting used to be an Olympic
sport. They keep adding sports in the winter. This year's really fun, actually. There's lots of crazy ski jumping now. Okay, it's like
that I'm interested in. Yeah. I mean, like in the same way that people are going to have a nationalist bent, people are kind of want to see maybe that guy's going to get severely injured. Things that almost result in injury is going to be inherently interesting to people. And I'd say
fire circus.
You could also add some novelty to it. And I don't remember what the event is, but it's wonderful. There's some like jokey version of the Olympics where it's like just who can slide the furthest on a kitchen floor in their socks. Who can like dive off a diving board while doing like a dolphin type thing. And I'm like, I would totally watch that as a sport.
You can imagine someone putting together something like a TikTok Olympics where everyone just does stupid crap at home and then you all emulate it. I think a lot of people would die.
They
can do that at the Olympics, like the week before. It's like a get ready
the fun
for the
Olympics.
The fun Olympics. You know? Not special, but
Why don't they pick, all right, because we've already found out that like authoritarian leaders of countries enjoy the Olympics because it's good for their ego.
Right.
So why not play into that and let's sign up Brazil for like the next 30 years. They get it every other or whatever. Once every, I guess if you have a summer, winter, then you have,
they can do both.
You have one every 2 years, right? So you give them one every 8 years. Everybody you pick four places and then you go like whatever, Spain, south of France, they get one every 4 years, maybe Canada
and
Australia.
I've got a really dumb question. Why does it all have to be at the same location?
Right.
I mean, like, because people that are doing skiing aren't doing triathlon.
Because
they're
socializing. Normal
they just
years.
Bang in the Olympic Village.
People like to bang in the Olympic Village.
No. It has to be. Because if you ever go.
The opening ceremonies.
I went to the Beijing Olympics.
Oh, you did. Oh, cool.
It's unbelievably awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because you have everyone from the world on vacation in the same place at the same time. It's like a week or 2 weeks or however long you decide to stay. No one has anything to do except go see stuff during the day and then flood the bars and party.
It's like a film festival, but way better.
For the world. It's awesome. It's great. Yeah. No, it should
to
definitely
to put it in language you might understand, it's like if the Edinburgh Fringe Festival were all over the world or something like that. You see how that would actually...
It wouldn't be as fun.
In a different
it wouldn't
place.
Be as fun, yeah.
It'd be sort of like what we have now.
You need
it
all together.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but he raised a good point because right now it's like, it's almost like tax abatements in like bad parts of the world, like cities. Like Detroit will like give you big tax credits to build up the shitty area downtown. Mm-hmm. And then like 10 years later, it's still shitty, right?
Yeah.
So that's what's happening now. And I think we should move on from that.
I think I would.
So we're saying Brazil. Yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
I would hasten away from overcorrecting based on the last two, just because you're right that COVID has done weird stuff to all of this. And maybe we all would be more interested in the Olympics if more of us were going or we knew, you know, there was more fanfare around it. And so I wouldn't necessarily change all our plans based on the two bad
so
ones.
You think COVID's going away?
I mean, the pandemic's been over for years.
Let's just have it in Florida.
It's a hoax. So, yeah.
Yeah. If where in America would we have it if we had to have one? Like
I
Los Angeles, Florida, Miami?
I have an idea. I've got an idea. Okay. This is a good idea, right? So part of the problem is we're spending all these money building stadiums. We ought to have a one-use stadium, right? Like this company you're talking about, Turner. So we're going to form a new country that's the permanent host. Also, it will be privately owned.
Mm.
Basically, seasteading with a stadium.
Olympics. It's just a country, Olympia.
It's just called Olympia.
We'll get an island called Olympia. It'll be a permanent new country that hosts all of the Olympic
Games.
That's
a great idea.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun. Great.
Or we could ask
super,
like
an island of super fit people.
Where would you put it? Israel or Palestine?
I've said for a long time, I think the problem in Israel is there's not enough ethnic groups.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd put it in between
the West Bank.
It should be an island between.
We will make it the wall. The wall itself will be 4 miles.
Yeah. Right.
It will just be the
Summer
Olympic Village. Yeah.
I like it.
Olympia.
All right. So it's either final conclusion. Either it's a new country or it's four places.
As long as it's not New York City, because they were going to do that once. And it's the Olympic Village is actually where I live right now, the place where Mike Bloomberg was planning to put the housing.
Oh, wow.
And everyone said, that's crazy. That became Long Island.
Hold on. Now I'm thinking if we did the new country, though, that would be the fittest country on earth, and America would slide down one more peg. So I don't know.
Well, who would live there between?
Only Olympians.
You wouldn't be a permanent resident.
Or they would live there.
But when you retire, you become like a groundskeeper.
You get citizenship.
You get citizenship. You can live there forever.
Oh, I love that.
Carl Lewis is like tending bar somewhere.
You have to get a medal to get citizenship.
You have to get a medal. You win your way into citizenship. I like this.
Only the true top athletes get to run.
Oh, my God.
Now it's a survival of fittest.
You have people from like war-torn countries.
If you're a refugee, you get to be a citizen.
Beat up by an American who doesn't give a shit about the citizenship.
I think this is just the Hunger Games. I think that's what we've done.
You know when Cubans would come over to play baseball?
I would dog real quick.
Well, Cubans would sometimes, you know, they would leave the team when they're playing baseball and they like on... Mm.
Yeah, defect.
Yeah, defectness could be a new thing if you're on the team and that's a whole new...
All right.
I like this. Great idea, guys.
I want to talk about something that's way more important. I want to talk about the royal family.
Okay.
Oh, yes.
All right. And I want to talk about some news coming out about the royal family that Charles and Camilla are planning their coronation. Now, I don't believe that as of this recording, Queen Elizabeth has died, and I don't really know what the etiquette is around planning a coronation before somebody dies, but apparently she has signed off on Camilla getting like some very fancy queen-like, if not actual queen crown, queen regent or queen something.
Can we start backwards a little bit? Is Camilla, is that Charles's wife?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Start with the basics of
the Duchess of Cornwall,
right.
I think.
And she, I didn't know her story until I saw the historical documentary, The Crown.
Okay.
Thanks to the pandemic.
I should be watching that.
I find that their story, you know, Camilla was very hated for a long time because everyone loved Diana, blah, blah, blah. But I think it's rather nice that Charles and Camilla have found each other. And I think I'm boring to death all three
second
of you.
Wife. That's right. He was already married.
That's right.
But that was always the one he had a flame for,
right?
Well,
exactly.
And then his uncle, the Lord Mountbatten, pushed him into marrying Diana because they needed the bloodline.
She was good for ratings.
And
they knew.
She was like 19.
White women really loved her.
Right. But it turns out he always really liked her.
Yeah. So I think it's actually a really happy story is that they have kids from separate people. They both married other people. And then they came together later in
life. They're multi-family, just like us. They're just regular people.
We could blame them for Diana's death, but we don't need to go into that.
Mm-hmm. One
statute of limitations.
Yeah.
One, I think she killed Diana.
Okay.
And two, isn't she a redhead?
No, I don't.
Camilla?
I believe she's a blonde.
I don't think so.
Who's the redhead? Blonde?
You're thinking of Fergie.
Fergie.
Who's that? I am
she's
thinking.
She's the Dutch. Is she
from the Black Eyed Peas?
Prince Andrew's former wife, I believe.
Prince Andrew. Wait, what about his coronation? Where is he on the coronation chart?
How far down is he?
How many people have to die?
A lot of people, unfortunately.
I will say
have to die.
That the news today that came out about Charles and Camilla happened to coincidentally come out at the same time as a news alert about Prince Andrew settling this lawsuit as well. And so imagine
the lawsuit means he's innocent.
So it's almost as though the royal family is trying to distract by putting out other news. So I don't know. You know what I mean?
Wait, like Epstein Island could be the Olympic Island. it's empty now, right?
Nice.
Little St. James.
A really good idea.
What one thing could redeem the Hunger Games we decided earlier? Let's put it on a sex perverts billionaires island.
I'm sure it had great facilities. I'm sure everyone had to stay in shape there.
I feel like
toss some money to like anti-youth trafficking.
We'll bring other trouble
Bill
to you.
Cut the rivet on the first one up in here before.
There we go.
And they should give immediate citizenship to anyone who's been there before, like Chelsea Handler and Bill Clinton.
Dershowitz.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Dershowitz. Yeah.
Forced citizenship. Alan you lose Dershowitz. Your U.S. passport.
So back to the royal family.
Right.
Is the kind of the onus of the topic that... We're happy for Charles and Camilla,
So part of the onus of the topic is that I'm decided that I'm happy for Charles and Camilla.
Okay.
But I also wanted to hear what you all think about having a royal family, in particular Heaton, having lived over there. I feel like you must have views on this.
He is Scottish, right?
I am ethnically just a jar of mayonnaise.
Yeah.
I'm English, Scottish, German, and then a bunch of little tiny bits.
Because there's like
mayonnaise with black pepper in it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I was telling you, there's a show that my wife was just binging on Netflix about someone who pretends to be a German heiress and cons everybody.
You could totally con everybody
and pretend to be like a Scottish
I can do the voice.
You could do it.
It might be happening. It might be it.
If this is what I'm trying to con people into, of like, I am a mid-level comedian and podcast host, and that's the wool I'm pulling
over.
I need to set my targets higher. So I am. very pro-ceremonial monarchy. So okay. to make a clarification, and people that are longtime listeners in my show have heard the stump speech here before, I apologize, but I'm going to do it again. I am not for monarchy in the sense of hereditary despots. I'm very much opposed to that in the sense of the monarchs that we once fought against in the British and in the Revolutionary War and in Europe during the revolutions and right now in the Middle East as we are allies with Saudi Arabia, which is a hereditary despotism of feudalism and theocracy. Horrible stuff. Don't like that. Ceremonial monarchs, I think, are a great idea because my thing is, I think we're always going to have some kind of reverent alpha chief worship that right. seems to be innate to the human condition.
And Americans have found a way, JFK, Obama,
and it's really bad. I think reality it's really, really bad.
Yeah.
So like,
it's the
like
ultimate reality show.
What we did, one of the most brilliant things that America did as a gift to the world is separating church and state. That we were the first country to institute that I'm aware of, maybe Geneva or something, but like we did that writ large, brilliant. Separating church and state, brilliant. What Britain stumbled into, they didn't plan this, but what they stumbled into was separating power from reverence. Mm. The queen reigns, the prime minister rules, the prime minister governs, right? And if you go over there, people will relentlessly make fun of the prime minister, which right. I think is very healthy. I think that you should view public servants as servants. I don't think you should view them as the father of the nation or the high priest or the chief or anything like that. They're the top bureaucrat. And you should kick them around and scrutinize them. And they do that over there, even if they're in the same party. No one ever likes the prime minister. No one ever worships the prime minister. They really like the queen, but she can't send anybody off to die.
Right.
So I would love to have, like, I was for years, I was a proponent of making Betty White queen of America.
That's fine.
And put her on the stand.
Well, it's like a state-sponsored reality show.
Here's basically. My question is, and I'm wondering what all of you think of it, is why, I don't know why I care about the British royal family. I find them to be a curious...
Kevin knows why you care.
Curious, like, curious. I follow them. I saw it trending on Twitter. I immediately clicked on all the things. I read about how they're going to put Kate and William and their kids on the patio or whatever balcony that they're on. And I was like, that's great for them. Like, and I was like, why do I care about this? And I agree with you about the ceremonial part. And I can see why having that reverence would be nice. But I also feel like if we were doing it in the US and channeling a bunch of money to Betty White or to anyone, I'd be super mad. Mm. So it's sort of like the Canada hosting the Olympics, where sure. I'm glad they exist because it's fun for me to observe. But if my tax dollars were going, I'm getting so conservative. My tax yeah. dollars were going yeah, yeah. to support them, I'd be super mad.
And you're still into it. Did you hear from Meghan Markle that they might be racist, the royal family?
I did hear that.
Yeah. That's the worst part. Yes. I didn't know that the royal family could be racist.
Can you imagine? This is the royal family of the UK.
I'm just going to get straight up Tory now. That's bullshit.
Here's a question.
Meghan Markle went on a
For Dr. Andrea.
There we go.
What do you think of Meghan Markle?
I think she seems fine. Hey. I did have some conversations with Grifter. Some wealthy white Grifter. British people when I was on my mystery rich island. That
and her
was
husband,
not the Epstein so. Island.
You were looking at other
yeah,
islands.
Yeah, pups, where they things. Were like, wow, no one in England likes her. And I don't know if that's because maybe there is something to all the stories that say that she's kind of a jerk or if that's just a sign of further racism. So I feel I don't have enough information.
I would like to go on my Tory screed now.
Go on.
Because I become a Tory the moment
I
set
But I will say,
foot.
I feel like the classic story of a wife.
Stand down.
getting married and then pulling the husband out of the family, like that kind of rubs me, like the raises some alarm bells, even though the family is obviously
Let me just add something here.
I'm going to get canceled. Go ahead.
No, you're not. You're on the side of the canceling people.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. The problem with her and her husband is that
Meghan and Harry.
The hostage.
Yeah.
Prince Harry.
No. Woo! I think they're both equally detestable.
Agreed.
Only because, maybe not detestable, that could be wrong. I think that they're useless. They haven't done anything. Yeah. What if she was on Suits? It was like a USA show?
And a commercial.
Who even gets USA?
Right. I used to get it in Shanghai.
I don't know if I get USA. So
she's huge in China.
She's done that. She's like a low-level, middling actress.
Low-level.
Right?
I wouldn't call it mid-level. Yeah.
And he's nothing. He's born into the right family. And they got, $30 million
Netflix deal.
Spotify?
Netflix deal, too.
Spotify will not pay comedians for the jokes they write currently, but they will pay them $30 million to produce, and I have quotation marks, if you're listening or no, produce podcasts.
Whoa.
We are all producing.
Why can't they produce us?
Well,
and you want to know.
And wait, last thing.
Yep.
Is that we all know, and everyone on Earth knows by this point, podcasting is not based off of if you're a celebrity or not.
Yeah, it's
the
talent.
Biggest podcaster in the world is Joe Rogan. He was just some guy on a 90s sitcom. Mm-hmm. He wasn't even the lead. He was like the sixth person, but interesting is what podcasts are based on.
Right.
So anyway, if they're great people, they should take that $30 million and redistribute it to all these comedians.
But they can't. You can't. They've been cut off by the royal family. This was a big source
like
of contention.
Throw up in my mouth.
Are they
cut off though? They don't have any.
This is what they did.
Cut off. They're adults. We're all cut off.
Every
adult.
My parents cut me off.
Catherine, they made an announcement.
Got podiatry inheritance.
They made an announcement that they were not going to be doing their royal duties anymore.
Right.
They were withdrawing from the family. Then 3 months later, went on Oprah to talk about how the royal family cut their allowance off.
And the racist, which is the biggest shocker of all.
And that other thing too, the racist thing, she's like, well, like, you know, my son, they're not calling him prince because he's black. And it's like, no, because he's not a prince in the line of succession. It's the same for Prince Andrew's son. Right. I mean, you fucking looked into this. There's no way you married a prince and didn't look into this or not. You're absolutely lying.
Wait,
and trying
I have a
to drum
slightly
up support.
Different point of view. Well, she might be lying. She also might be the dumbest person on earth to not know going in that the royal family was racist.
She's never watched Jeopardy. She doesn't know all the different... Like, I never know... You know the answers to, like, Edward V, all these different people, all these numbers? I don't know any... I don't know how people keep track of that.
Well, she did say something once where she was like, I didn't really do much research going into this.
Yeah,
and it's like,
I don't think anybody that grows up in America or Canada who marries a prince doesn't do a little bit of Wikipedia reading.
Right.
I'm fairly confident.
You always look into the person you're marrying's family. Tree,
also,
right?
I don't know. It all seems rather
Everyone hires a private investigator, right?
If I were marrying a princess, I think at some point I'd be like, by the way, is my kid going to be a prince? I would ask an attorney or something. I wouldn't go, well, if you don't make him a prince, I'll call you.
You don't just assume your kid's going to be
all
a
right.
prince.
All
anyway,
right.
Final statement is good for them. Good for, what's her name? Ginger?
Camilla.
Camilla.
So she's our next ruler. She'll be queen or she won't be queen?
Well, there's a weird thing where if you're the queen, your husband doesn't become king. But if you're the king, your wife is eligible
automatically.
For
so is that reverse? Like,
I don't know that it's automatic, which is why it was
is that women's rights?
The queen said it was like...
That's
I'm not
suffrage.
Sure.
That's what they marched for in America.
Queen Elizabeth did not... She
Prince
married,
Philip was never a king.
She married Prince Philip, but she never made him king because he would have been ruler. Because
he'd be her ruler.
I think the one thing we're kind of glossing over on this story and why my mom and all her friends hate Camilla is because... Because he have sex with her on the day of his wedding?
Something like that.
Whoa. Yeah.
I don't know about
the day of his wedding to Diana?
Yeah.
Or is it her? Oh, okay.
To Diana.
I didn't realize it was on the day. That's...
According to Myrna Sparks, it was
the day. All right.
On the day.
We'll have to get Myrna on
he
the
was
show.
Just, and also,
she
like,
could be our correspondent.
Cheating on his wife through the entire thing.
Right. Yeah.
And he cut Diana's brakes.
Well, she even had that.
Yeah, he cut her brakes.
Jesus Christ.
Anyway, that.
Well, and it turns out his families were racist.
Right.
That's the worst sin of all.
So on that note, my story today has to do with race, but it doesn't have to do with the royal family. It has to do with Whoopi Goldberg. Have you all been following this?
So
my favorite Jewish comedian.
For your favorite Jewish comedian. So Goldberg. For anybody that's unfamiliar with this, to give you
my favorite
I was like, who's saying it?
An abbreviated version of the story is she went on Colbert and went on The View and sort of began this process and then made it worse by claiming that the Holocaust was not about race.
Yes.
And
hot take.
The reason that she was claiming that the Holocaust was not about race was, in Whoopi Goldberg's mind, white people are a race. Jews are white. They are. So it's white on white crime. Therefore, couldn't be racism. It has to be ideological.
And finally, somebody said it.
If you listen to her, it's like I do actually feel some sympathy for her. If you're talking for a living all the time, you're going to put your foot
on a blowhard.
She's a blowhard.
She's just not a bright blowhard. That's the problem.
And I think what she was basically saying, people were being horrible to other people. So there it's not as if she was saying she was a Holocaust denier. But nonetheless, it angered a lot of people because she was claiming that the Holocaust was not primarily about race. Whereas most people would say Hitler... pretty straight up bigot.
I'm pretty sure the words Aryan race are. Yeah.
And they had the Nuremberg law, the rules of, the race laws, basically.
Yeah.
First thing he did.
Whoopi Goldberg saying Hitler was not a racist was not on my bingo card.
Yeah. I don't know that she said Hitler wasn't a racist. She just said that the Holocaust wasn't about race.
Really. She said he was evil, not racist.
But she said there's good people on both sides. No.
What?
She said it was about evil and hate.
She said it was about man's hatred for other man. That's what she said. Yeah. As if like it was two different people.
Kaplan, I feel like you need to explain this to the rest of us. Yeah, speak on behalf of all Jews. Because I thought Judaism, I'm going to keep talking, was an ethnicity. And that was the whole...
It's a confusing thing because...
Right. Yeah. Depends on what country club you go to.
Well, it's like if I convert to Christianity...
Okay.
Now I'm still considered Jewish, though, by the people who, by Hitler. You know what I mean? Like, nice try. Hitler. Exactly.
Well, sort of, it's an ethnic group and a religion and a culture.
The new rule is, would Hitler consider you Jewish?
I mean, you know, in most things, I guess you don't go with the worst person's interpretation of the laws, but I think in this case, you have to go with the worst person's interpretation.
Because he was hunting and
killing. Because he was literally, he said that Jews were an inferior race and that they should be wiped off the face of the earth.
I mean, again, he's...
I took a 23andMe test a couple of years ago. My dad and I are both part Ashkenazi Jew.
Oh, welcome.
Thank you.
Give me the secret handshake.
I would love to claim it, but because mom's not Jewish under Jewish law, I'm not, right? But I mentioned this to my friend Gene Epstein, and he just went, good enough for Hitler.
Yeah, if you're 1/8.
Thanks, Gene.
If you're 1/8 Hitler, they would track you down if you're 1/8. So
I'm not 1/8. I suppose I would still be able to skirt through.
You might be able to skirt through to the end.
So 1/16th, they don't care?
1/16th, they would have eventually got to
him.
Eventually, when they run out of everybody.
They were pragmatic. They had to start with a...
But what I find interesting about all of this is the reason that Whoopi went on this odd tangent is her, and she is using a very American way of looking at race,
which is a
kind of binary. There are white people and there are black people. This makes sense historically, given our history with slavery.
In America, it makes sense.
But let's remember, race is bullshit. It's not real. There's no such thing as race. It's just
a
social construct, 100%.
Yeah. Wait, we should also say, because you're right, it does make sense for America, but we should also say that the Holocaust didn't happen in America.
Right.
No, so we need to explain it to the audience. Well,
he's an American Holocaust denier.
Right. Well, and this is
sorry.
And I think that the destructive thing lurking in this worldview. The destructive thing is, it's never good to believe in any type of race essentialism. The idea that there's something inherent to a race of people, I think, is incredibly destructive. Or the idea that people have there's something truly like integrally mythical about your race, because again, it is nonsense. It's
made
just
up.
It's straight up made up.
I mean, we're great with money, but we don't actually say that. So.
Someone as smart as your people, surely.
You know, I would say Jews have a very high education rate and tend to do well financially compared to the rest of the population. That's cultural, right? It's not race.
It is cultural. Yes,
it's in the same way that like Swedish Americans have a different thing they're dealing with, but it's cultural. Mm-hmm.
What are they dealing with?
They also tend to do pretty well. But again, it's not because they've got Swedish blood in them. It's because of whatever their habits are and those kind of things.
Swedish Americans. But
the part that I like about Whoopi Goldberg is this. I didn't know this. Whoopi Goldberg has her stage name's Goldberg because she just kind of announced, my mom said that we were part Jewish when I was a kid. I identify as a Jew, even though to my knowledge, she's not.
I don't think it's even
accurate.
She just,
She literally, I mean, she Elizabeth Warren'd it where somebody went somewhere in our family, I guess a Jew maybe. And I kind of dig that though, because I think race is bullshit. I like people. We had a Jewess in our family. Yeah. I like doing that because I would like for people to kind of Rachel Dolezal all this, because it undermines that conceit.
Is she the one who pretended to
You got to explain these references.
Rachel Dolezal about 6 years ago been living life as a black woman, had like tanned, done her hair, was a member of the NAACP.
She was like high up on the
all
these things. She was like leadership.
Yeah. Wasn't she a professor or something?
Turns out that her name was like Amanda Dinkers or something. Right. And
Rachel Weinstein.
She was like a ginger and everything.
Fine bird.
But I kind of like that stuff though, because again, since races aren't real, I like people that are delegitimizing the conceit of it. And I think Whoopi Goldberg's actually doing that by apparently making it up.
Can I say something about this race not being real part?
Yeah.
Just to clarify what we mean on this?
I think race is real.
So I think we're talking about is what we've done as humans. Correct me if I'm wrong. So social, saying something as a social construct gets everyone all wound up. What it means is that we've taken a continuous variable and turned it into discrete. So if we take people and we look at their skin color or the shape of their faces or whatever else, there are some some maybe buckets that we could put someone in and say, these people are mostly look black. These people look Asian. These people look
buckets.
Not buckets. Okay. These people look white. But if you actually put everyone together, it's a spectrum and there's no hard and fast line. How is someone biracial, or do we categorize them as black or white?
There's more variation within a quote unquote race than there are between them. What there is, there's let's say like 40 different phenotypical traits. Our culture went, we're going to go with melanin. skin color, right? But you could go by height. You could go by shape of the face. You could go by eye. There's all these different things. We did it mostly to entrench
there's
a power
no such
structure
thing as race
racism.
And the same thing is there's no such thing inherent in like countries, but we've sat down and drawn the lines. They're human constructed divisions.
Okay, but we've all, I get what you guys are talking about, but you do agree that they're racist, right? Are you saying
that there are
there's a classification called races
there is a category we made up that classifies people based on a clump of traits that we've drawn something around, right?
Yeah.
So, but
the world operates within
the world operates
and
that
we do
way.
Those with gender. We do those with all kinds of stuff.
My main point though is it's not like if you take a 23andMe test, what the 23andMe test really said is that there are certain alleles that are. That are more proliferate with certain groups of people and migratory things, and I inherited some of those alleles. I'm not an actual percent Jewish in the same way that like.
Well, I got 100% Ashkenazi Jewish.
Congrats.
But very exciting.
But like truly genetically though.
Through that.
genetically though.
99.9.
We're both 100% human.
That's true.
But we have certain alleles that are correlated with
but
migratory
Whoopi
patterns.
Whoopi wasn't doing this with all your thinking.
No.
I doubt
she's
it.
She's just an idiot.
Whoopi was just saying what color was their skin.
Whoopi has a very like, most people, it's like popular now to say like, I don't see color, right?
Right.
What Whoopi's saying is I only see color.
Well, I think a lot of people, I think an American left.
The only thing that matters to me is what color you are.
But I think that you're stumbling up, like the people on the left, a lot of people now do just like everything becomes about color.
Yes.
And that's it's very American centric, I think, too.
Right.
So like throughout history,
people talking about Israel.
Well, exactly. But throughout history, people have hated other people, right? Like they just, people have not. I mean, I mentioned this on Twitter yesterday on Valentine's Day in like the 1300s in France. They killed thousands of Jews one day because they blamed us for the plague.
St. Valentine.
Hated
done
Jews.
It.
And that's why we don't like.
Well, we did have it, but you know, you shouldn't have killed.
Should
it was
I
one
not
guy.
Have wished you a happy Valentine's Day?
Yeah, I try to get out of giving my wife flowers, but I'd already.
It's really smart.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The point is, people have hated Jews forever. They've considered them a separate entity forever.
Right.
And there's plenty of other races too that have been. Discriminate against, whatever word you want to use. So like, but then we get
killed
to like,
is a word anyway.
Killed, yes. Pogroms, you know. But then we get to this modern America where it's just everything's black and white, and then they're like, you can't. Like, how would you see like Rwanda in that?
Right.
Or like, how would you see like any or Israel too?
Or
yes.
Like Barack Obama, who's like like Barack Obama's mom is a white woman from Kansas. Like,
he's actually more percent white than black.
Right. Mm. And the blacks from Kenya. Yeah. Like he's not descended.
It's not American black. Yeah, exactly.
Well, and I have a professor at Michigan who when he was first elected, he was like, right, Obama is not black in the sense of like a member of the black community. Mm. And when like, this was a black man who said,
No.
And
Andrew Jones Roy says,
I'm not going to like pretend to,
that's our clip.
One of my friends,
that's the clip.
But yeah,
Dr. Roy says Obama is not black.
I'll zoom in on my face. One
of my friends at DC had a joke about that of going like, right. But like you're never going to have like a white guy out of a trailer park become president either. Like, you're not like, he's not really white. Cause he didn't go to a trailer party. Like you never get,
you're going to get trouble for that too.
But yeah, and that's the whole thing. Like, they see like Jews as like as white people, basically, like the power people.
Well,
and
do you consider yourself white?
Well, when we fill out these surveys,
depends on what country club.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Plenty of country club. Friars club. It's a good thing. Plenty of country clubs is not. But yeah, whenever we fill out paperwork. There's never a spot for Jew.
Right.
It's always white. Yeah. But I always click other, though. I like to click other to be difficult.
Because it's not nearly as fixed as people think it is. Like, like the term white, this is a thing where white used to, in America, mean Anglo-Saxon and preferably Protestant.
Exactly.
We left French, Germans, and English in here, but even Germans, maybe not. If they're like, there was a distinct people, whether there's
not
Italian,
like Italians weren't
there's
white.
High country Germans, the high, there's swarthy people, and Italians weren't white. Yeah. If you go to England, the term black means different than it does over here, at least it used to. Like black in England a few years ago meant Indian as opposed to African. And Jews were not considered white, and then they became white. Same with Irish. Irish were not considered white, again, because it's a bullshit term. It's not real.
Well, and in the U.S., we also make the distinction, like on the census and other things, between race and ethnicity. And apparently, Anya Taylor-Joy, I read this last night, got in big trouble because she was described as a Latina, and she's like the blonde person from Queen's Gambit. And it turns out she does have some Latin origin, but
football.
She's super white, and you can be white
Kaplan
and Latina
and
because it's an ethnicity.
I have been railing against this loophole for years.
Yeah, all right.
These like white Central Americans, South Mexicans, right? But they are descendants of the Spanish.
Yeah.
Like Argentinians are like straight up.
Who
European.
Came.
They were conquerors. They
conquered
the same thing Columbus did.
The Mayans or the Incas.
They're
or
us,
the
but in the South.
Yeah. The
but then they come to America and then they're like.
Latino.
I'm speaking specifically of comedians.
Yeah.
I know white comedians from Central America who are like, oh, it's so hard being a person of color. I'm like, what color? Yeah. You look as white as I do.
Well, technically,
Daniel Parafan.
White is all the colors. Daniel Parafan.
I think the interesting inverse that's happening right now is that like 100 years ago, you really wanted to be white because there was an entrenched racist power structure and you wanted to be into that.
Yeah.
But now, culturally, particularly among more left-wing areas, there is a hierarchy of victimhood. And your moral certitude and moral authority are derived from victimhood. So the more things you can stack on there, the more moral authority you have.
It's got to be the case that I'm going to really get canceled now. It's got to be the case that people who are white passing but can claim some kind of POC status have like won in the 2020 race loophole.
Right.
The
Venn diagram is perfect
for them.
Well,
yeah.
That's
but you don't have to deal with all the crap walking around.
Yeah, but ironically, in like 1920 Germany, like the German Jews thought that's exactly how they felt. That's why they didn't leave. They thought themselves as German. Mm. They thought that this was like Germany was like America.
Then, I fought in World War I.
I fought in the war.
I'm German.
I'm Western.
German.
I'm not religious. Like the Nazis weren't religious. The same way, you know, they were like, I'm not like those Jews.
Right.
I'm not obviously, you know.
Yeah.
So
right.
then
right,
obviously. Obviously, they were wrong.
All right, Daniel Parafan, you don't have it easy.
Cold
take. Yeah.
Freezing
so
cold.
I'm going to learn from them.
Yeah.
And
last story. Should we do it?
So real quick, we are at 2 o'clock right now.
Okay.
Do you want to finish this? Do you need to leave? What do you want to do?
You can go ahead.
We'll just do a quick lightning round here.
All right. Do you want to? I got to go. Do you want to say everyone? Well, everyone in Ukraine seems to be about to die, and that sucks. So that's my hot take.
Okay.
Good.
Great.
All
right. Good job. Right. Bye, Andrea.
Bye. She is leaving.
But you're right, we are in the
camp. Well, now we can really say what we think.
Now
that
Andrew's let
gone.
It rip.
This is where you find out if I ever listened to the last quarter of our podcast.
Kev, go ahead.
As Andrew just mentioned, there's a little scuffle brewing in Ukraine, as you might have heard.
You mean West Russia?
West Russia, exactly. So we've talked about this on Lost in America twice in the past month or so about Russia invading Ukraine. And you know, our comedian experts, basically they didn't seem that worried about it. They seem like they're both based in Kiev.
It does seem like we're more worried than they are about them being attacked by Russia.
Yeah. And then the other day when news broke that, America was getting all of our diplomats out and the stock market crashed and Russia was about to invade, Putin apparently released a tweet or something. Somebody said, then it seemed like, oh, maybe we underestimate this. This is going to be like World War III is about to happen.
What did Putin's tweet say?
No, Putin didn't tweet, but somebody tweeted that the Russian sources say that Putin has informed the military that they're going to invade.
Okay.
And then we confirmed that we believe the America State Department said that was going to happen. We started telling people to run for cover. The market crashed. Oil went up. And then I thought, oh, maybe we undersold this in our podcast that maybe this is about to be World War III. But now it seems like today's latest news, it keeps going back and forth. Mm. Today's latest news seems like Russia's pulling back a little bit. There's been, so I don't know. What do we think is going to happen? Do we have any?
I think there's a more interesting question here than what's going to happen. I think it's what do we think the U.S. should do if an attack does happen?
Right.
Should we? Because there's part of it's hard to keep up with where the liberals and where the conservatives side on this specific issue because it seems all over the place. And I think it definitely depends on who the president like with Biden as our president. I think that it seems like the mainline Democrats or like the more central Democrats want to go to war, want to protect Ukraine. Right.
And they also hate Russia because the whole Trump stuff.
And they hate Russia. I think, but the far but
Biden has been historically hawkish as well.
Yeah, but the far left Democrats, the AOC crowd, I would assume, I guess I haven't double checked, doesn't want war.
If I could tweak this, I do not think that foreign policy is usefully understood as left versus right because that's not where the breakdown is. First of all, foreign policy has had a very strong consensus in American politics since the Cold War. There's really not been any variation in foreign policy in a significant amount, right? It's just been a question of like, do we stay at the same speed or do we accelerate? Very rarely do we pull back, right?
In terms of, well, we pulled back in Afghanistan.
We pulled back in Afghanistan. And we also in the 90s, late 90s, we did close some bases down. But for the most part, though, no one's really questioning the American system and the idea that we should have a bunch of bases abroad and have alliances with NATO and with the Pacific equivalent and with Japan and with Taiwan. All of the, no one's really questioning that. Trump kind of did, but even he wasn't pulling us out of that many things. He set the stuff in the works for Afghanistan. I would say in terms of foreign policy, it's more helpful to look at it as interventionists and non-interventionists.
Isolationists versus interventionists. Yeah.
And that does break down in a weird way because you'll have like AOC and Ron Paul.
Yeah.
Right. The libertarian is side and the...
Right.
Discover why I never went full libertarian because of that.
Meanwhile, like John McCain and Hillary Clinton, same foreign policy.
Yeah. Right?
They're not different in terms of foreign policy.
And that is the weird wraparound where Bernie Sanders and Trump met up.
Right.
When they would say two sides of the same coin, it was that they were...
And they were the same on trade. They were also both protectionists.
They also both make excuses for dictators. They have a lot of...
What do we think as a group, one by one, I guess, if Russia does go into Ukraine, what should the U.S. do?
I'm on the non-intervention side of things. I think that America has a incredible track record of arming people that eventually attack us. I don't really like the idea of our foreign policy just trying to be to put a noose around Russia. I think that what we should be focusing on is trying to alleviate whatever we can through humanitarian means, by taking refugees, by getting people in there. Maybe sanctions. They seem to work when we were doing them on Iran, although normally I don't think they work. I think usually sanctions just hurt the people in the country and they don't hurt the rulers. But if you target them so that, you know, you're hitting the bank accounts of the rulers, that might help. But in general, though, I'm inclined to not get into that fight. I wish everybody in Ukraine luck and I am rooting for them. Should America just step in every time a bad country pushes around another country? I think that's a really good way to stretch ourselves too thin, build an empire, and end up putting our fingers in stuff we don't know a lot about we shouldn't be doing. So I tend to be much more skeptical about intervening.
I just want to ask you, what do you think then of like NATO as a concept? Because this is all about if Ukraine was in NATO or not. If they were in NATO, this wouldn't be a question. We would be defending them.
We would be, yeah.
And they want to be in, that's the whole reason why Putin's doing this, I believe.
So I am a big NATO fan.
Yeah.
I think that the genius of George H.W. Bush, and people don't really give him a lot of credit, George H.W. Bush did a wonderful job overseeing the implosion of the Soviet Union and the end of the Cold War. That could have gone really poorly with a great power
collapsing. Imagine if Trump was president
It didn't. And like the two things that he did that I thought were very smart in terms of administering that dissolution of the Soviet Union were, one, he kept NATO going because previously NATO had just been a bulwark against Russian aggression. And absent Russian aggression, what he basically did was, hey, we want to keep this together as a civilizational bloc. We think it's a good idea for the United States and for Europe to be on the same page militarily rather than Europe becoming a rival great power. That was a smart move. I'm glad that we're on the same page there. The second thing he did, which we've now backed away from, is that he called Yeltsin and he said, look, we understand the Soviet Union's imploding, but we also understand that Russia is a historic great power. We are not going to attempt to annex your historic satellites into our sphere of interest. We're not going to try and go into the Baltic states. We're not going to go into Ukraine. Now, we did. We went into the Baltic states, or we didn't go in. They were invited to join NATO under Clinton. After Bush, yeah. But he had held back on that. I think that that was kind of a smart move. I think that having like kind of a buffer there, there's always going to be a lot of friction. And the truth of the matter is that's their backyard and they have a lot of power to swing around. And it probably would be better for us not to have our bases right on the edge of Russia.
Okay. I'm going to disagree.
Okay.
And reason being, Putin's a menace and he's been doing it for a long time. Uh-huh. And he's just taking every couple of years, he tests by like taking more and more and more. And he's growing and growing and growing. He took Crimea 2014. Yeah. No one did anything, right? He's essentially taken Belarus now by propping up this brutal, murderous dictator, Lukashenko. Right,
and his people are running the economy now, apparently.
Belarus. He just went in and took over. He took over the state media. He's doing it in, where were we talking with recently?
Well, he went into Kazakhstan, right?
Kazakhstan. He's now supporting the essentially dictator of Kazakhstan. Mm. And he's setting up puppet regimes all around Eastern Europe, and they're only in power because he's in power. Mm-hmm. They're all evil. They're all killing people, their own people. They're all like dictators. They're all manipulating the media. They're essentially just pumping in state-run Russian media.
Sure.
And if he went down, they would all fall immediately because no, their people in their own countries don't want them there. They're only there because they have the whole Russian army behind them
right.
and Putin behind them.
Yeah.
So I think that if Putin falls, which I would love for it to happen, they would all fall immediately. And now Belarus, the people in Belarus would have a better life. The people in Kazakhstan would have a better life. It's like multiple countries would be able to now run them, like, whether it's democratically elected or however they figure it out. They could figure it out on their own without
Russian influence. My pushback on this is, how is this qualitatively different than Saddam Hussein? Saddam Hussein, not as big and powerful as Russia, but it seems to me that your moral objections to Putin and the power struggles he's doing in the region are the same as that of Saddam Hussein. Should we have gone in to ask Saddam Hussein?
Well, when he invaded Kuwait,
we didn't the first time.
Okay.
I agreed with that.
Fair point. And again, George H.W. Bush didn't invade Iraq. He got him out of Kuwait, and then he went, we don't have an exit strategy.
I mean, there's a way to do this, perhaps, diplomatically. I just don't know if Biden's up to it.
Are you willing to risk World War III over Ukraine? I mean,
yeah, because
I don't think Putin really.
I don't think World War III is going to happen. I think Putin's a bully, and he's getting pushed right now. And there's even, I mean, it's like coming out as we speak, so we can't be responsible for knowing what the information is. Mm. But it seems like he's starting to back down. Now, this could all
right
a week from now when you release this podcast, it could all change.
Yeah,
but it seems like now that he's like, he know it's US plus Europe against Russia, and there's no guarantee that China's going to jump in and help him at all.
I think it's tricky because
probably won't.
We don't really want to send troops per se, you know, American troops, I don't think, but sending lots of money and aid, and if a small force doing something to show that we're not.
So you would like maybe fund the military or something like give them just a military block grant?
I just think there's got to be a way to, I mean, maybe without going so boldly as saying they're part of NATO now, but like some sort of protection, some sort of guarantee for Ukraine, because otherwise, yeah, they're just going to take, he's just
going
to do this eventually.
He's going to keep going.
And he's going to,
this is like his third or fourth time he's done it.
And he's going to do like, I mean, the digital stuff, the whatever you call it, a warfare of like, obviously the election, but like he keeps doing things.
He's like, a bad dude. No one's disagreeing.
Oh, like meddling and all of that.
Like he's going to probably do something, some sort of breach soon, I would assume.
Are you just kind of in general, are you guys in favor of if there is another country pushing another country around, we should go in and be the guys to mop it up if we can do so?
It's tricky because I know history says that's a bad idea.
Yeah, I will if there's an actual genocide going on and you can get a multinational coalition, I would do that. But the idea that like we're going to go in and go, well, you know, Indonesia's pushing around Java, we should go sort that out.
But if England and other countries are involved,
there's no A+ answer to that question, because if we do nothing, then forget the idea that this country now takes over that country and A country takes over B country and neither one directly affects us. It all, I think when we left Afghanistan 6 months ago, we did it terribly, but forget all that.
Yeah.
Just the fact that us leaving it, it sounds great on paper. Get our people out. But then Putin now is more emboldened to go do crazy shit. Lukashenko is emboldened. Like all these little dictators, and Putin's not a little dictator, but there's a lot of them around the world. They now are not scared of America as much as they used to be because we just showed we took a loss.
And we can also do economic things like we've talked about. There's the pipeline going through Germany. Germany's getting their gas from Russia, the Nord Stream pipeline. And obviously, we could convince Germany to finally
pressure Germany to
shut it off. But also, we have more energy than Russia has. Like, we don't use it because we're very environmentally friendly. But we and other countries that have energy can make to just start overloading. You know, we could do things to affect Russia could lose.
Russia's also a poor country.
They're poor and they need oil money. If they don't have oil money, they're nothing. The whole oligarchy goes apart. So
their whole economy.
We start drilling, by the way. Biden's not going to do that. But there are things we could do with our energy in America.
Drill, baby, drill.
Drill, baby, drill and say, we'll give all those countries Russia's giving oil to, we'll give you oil.
This is why I'm in favor of fracking.
Yeah, frack away.
Because it makes us rely less on foreign dictators.
That's true.
And has also been a boon to environmentalism, as I am quick to point out to people. People think of energy sources as either being holy or sinful, which is a dumb way to look at energy. And you look at fracking. Fracking is the reason that we surpassed the Kyoto Protocol back during the weaning days of the Clinton administration. Al Gore was a big proponent of joining the Kyoto Protocol to get our emission standards down. We didn't. Everybody thought it was horrible. We surpassed them. We did it because of fracking. Because fracking is way cleaner than coal.
Yes.
So fracking. Fracking will say, fracking for peace. Let's make sure.
Fracking for peace.
Fracking for peace.
I think I can get us a Koch brothers grant right now for that phrase.
AOC types won't agree, but maybe the right will. So
who needs them? That's it. Is that the show?
I think that's the show.
Thank you to the Friars Club for having us today. We got to do it straight live from the Friars Club.
This was great. It was delightful to see you both and to see Andrea.
Great to see you.
Great to be in a club that'll have me as a member.
What?
It's great to be in any club that would have me as a member. Back to our conversation earlier.
Come see my show March 11th, everybody, at the Friars Club. Listen to Lost in America podcast. Listen to Dr. Andrea Jones-Roy.
Majoring in Everything.
Majoring in Everything podcast.
What do we call your listeners?
Lost Americans.
Lost Americans. Lost
Losers?
Lost Americans. Come check out the political orphanage. We'd love to have you.
Loser Americans. The ones who don't subscribe to our Patreon show are the loser Americans.
I like loose Americans.
Loose Americans
sounds pretty good.
There you go. Loose Americans. Check out Ian.
All right. Thanks, gang.
Get lost.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.